Playoffs are here, Jeff Merrick. The playoffs have arrived. Rejoice!
We've been waiting for this moment all season long, haven't we, Wish? This is day one of the playoffs. Three big games tonight. The times are staggered. 7:30, 8 o'clock Eastern, and 10:30 for the Kings and the Vancouver Canucks. Ooh, the hockey bath is about to start, Wish.
Here's the thing about the playoffs. I still think that as hockey fans, we have not reached the point of saturation when it comes to hockey hype for the playoffs. Now, and by that I mean this. At some point, the garage band is going to go mainstream, if you know what I'm saying. At some point, I'm talking about here in the States, at some point, things are going to go to the point where the Stanley Cup playoffs are no longer this wonderful thing that we're convincing all of our friends to watch, all of our friends will watch, and then it becomes kind of a little bit less cool than now. To help keep playoff beards in check. It's a sponsorship with Phillips Norelco around the playoff beard, and this is not the first time. This has been a steady thing where the playoff beard is being corporatized and monetized. It started as a charity thing with these teams doing the beard-a-thons and stuff, and now I feel like the playoff beard to me is entering into a phase of overhype and uncoolness because now it's gone corporate.
It was the Islanders that started it during their four Stanley Cup runs. They were the first ones to say, hey, you know what, guys, let's drop the razors. This is a thing we're going to do, a little team bonding exercise. And now it's reached the point, to your point, you're exactly right, where the corporate sponsors have become involved. And at that moment, Wish, the cool factor is gone. Like the secret handshake that hockey fans have and hockey players have is now gone. To the point where, if I'm a hockey player, screw it, I'm shaving every day.
No,
every single day.
You see, we have to fight back against it. You are letting the terrorists win if you have to make them shave off their beards.
No, when the unsavory lot moves in next to you, you leave. You get up and leave. Like when you realize that there's a ghost in the house, like this was the Chris Rock lesson of Poltergeist, right? Oh yeah, oh, no, Eddie Murphy, right? Oh yeah, wonderful house, wonderful neighborhood. You hear there's a ghost inside the walls. Oh, too bad, we gotta leave. No, you know what? There's a ghost in the wall now. It's time to leave. It is time to leave.
Because what we have here is a situation where the town elders are telling us that we can't dance. Well, you know what what happens when that happens?
Oh no!
Turn up the music and we dance.
No, man, the town elders are saying, you have to dance because we attach a corporate sponsor to it. So please keep on dancing to our benefit. You've got it all backwards. They're saying, dance, be free, go ahead. As they bring in the long, quiet green. That's what's in fact happening here, Wish. To the point where there is only one way to fight back. As I see it, Wish. For the fellas, shave away. That's it. Keep it nice, you know, nice and tight. High up around the ears too. Nice and clean.
Oh, yeah.
Enough of this playoff beard. The only group that I don't want to see shaving all throughout the playoffs because, yes, it is a sacrifice. Yes, it is an inconvenience. But you know what? Do it for your team. Ladies, put down the razors. That's what I'm saying. Ladies, it's over. You're the ones. We can only be saved by the women here. Try to sponsor that. I dare you.
You know, there's a fatal flaw to your argument, sir. And the fatal flaw is this. Alex Ovechkin. Alex Ovechkin follows your advice. Alex Ovechkin faces but a baby's bottom sometimes when the postseason arrives.
That's because he has
a Gillette sponsorship. No matter if you have a beard or if you're clean shaven, there is a razor company that wants to give you money. It's all a sham. It's all corporate, Merrick.
All right.
What happened to punk rock?
How do you get around it? How do you make the play? How do you come up with a punk rock hockey ritual? I've already laid mine out, but that's only for the fairer species, the fairer sex. How do you do it? How do you do it then?
Well,
how can you bring rock and roll back into the playoffs?
I look to the Chicago Blackhawks and I say to myself, you either do the mullets, the Patrick Kane hockey hair, because hockey hair to me, Merrick, has as much of a tradition as a hockey playoff beard, or you'd go the Jonathan Taves route and grow some gigantic Victorian mutton chops on your face.
The Wolverines?
Like looking like a Victorian vampire. I think the mutton chop could also be the way to go as well.
I have not given up on the playoff beard.
You seem like you've soured it.
Done.
I'm concerned about its future. I've not given up on it. Beginning tomorrow on Puck Daddy, we have the ladies from What's Up, You Civ giving us a weekly look at the playoff beard. So I have not given up on the playoff beard, even though it sounds like you've decided to dump all of your records into the trash can and move on to the next garage band.
You know, it's like, you know, U2 was a cool band once upon a time. For it was when Sunday Bloody Sunday came out, and it was kind of a secret handshake amongst music fans. And then they just exploded, right, after Live Aid. Right? It was that marathon session where Bono did bad, and they went way over time, and they became an international phenomenon. They attached the rocket to the back of their sweaters, and they took off into a different stratosphere. But you lost something in the process. They were no longer ours. It wasn't this little sort of secret little idea. It wasn't the cool factor was gone from you two. And now with beards, it's like goatees. Like, don't you, when you see a dude with a goatee now, you're like, dude, it's not 1995. I'm as guilty as anyone. I used to have one. Hot and cold on the goatees. I've done it before. Now I'm full on anti-donut around the mouth. But when you see dudes with goatees, I just say, really? It's 2012 and you're rocking that? It's done. It's played. Kind of like Movember is.
No, I don't think so. I think Movember is.
I love the charity. I don't know. Completely forced and almost expected to the point where it doesn't really seem authentic anymore. Because once you have a corporate sponsor attached to it, it's like, oh, you're doing this as part of a big corporate initiative, as opposed to, hey, this is what I'm doing for the playoffs. This is just what I do.
I had a goatee when I was fatter, and it looked like a pile of pizza dough trying to eat a kitten. It was terrible. Never will happen again. Tonight's games on the docket as we begin the Stanley Cup playoffs and you begin growing all of your different follicle
adventures. Come on, ladies. Step up.
The Philadelphia Flyers at the Pittsburgh Penguins. According to the Philadelphia media merrick, Danny Briere, ready to rock and roll game one of the playoffs. Briere, a perfect example of the type of player who had a middling regular season, but one assumes, based on the history, that he will come to play in the playoffs. Nearly a point per game player throughout his history as a playoff performer, and we're talking like 96 points in 97 games or something like that.
Yeah, dude is awesome. I'm just gonna grab the lines here really quickly so we're on the same page here. For the Philadelphia Flyers, Daniel Briere will be playing with a couple of kids, Braden Schenn and Jacob Voracek. How come he was Jake in Columbus? Is he back to being Jacob or Jakob, depending on how you pronounce
Jakob.
It?
They call Jakob him Jake in Philly, Voracek. I think, too. I think they
do
call
they
him
really?
Jake in Philly.
Did that ever bug you, like, when, you know, the really tough to pronounce European names, like, all of a sudden, Rudislav Klesla became Rusty Klesla.
Rusty.
And Jacob Voracek became Jake Voracek. All right.
Yes. You know what it reminded me of, Eric? You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of when people would come through Ellis Island with really complicated last names, and then they'd get shortened.
Sullivan. You're Sullivan. I'm from Genoa. You're Sullivan.
You lose all that heritage when you come through. Sorry, Rusislav, you're now Rusty.
I'm from Northern Italy. You're now Washington. All right.
You're now named after Clark Griswold's son. Congratulations.
Claude Giroux with Yager and Scott Hartnell. Wellwood. No, not that Wellwood. His brother. Eric Wellwood with Simmons and Reed. Couturier with Talbot and Zach Rinaldo gets into the lineup for the Philadelphia Flyers. Come on down. We may have some fireworks. Thiemann and Carl, Coburn, Grossman, Lilia, and Bourdon. For the Pittsburgh Penguins, Malkin, Neal, and Kunitz. Look out. Crosby, Dupuis, and Sullivan. What did Dupuis have? Was it 17 games in a row?
Yeah.
A point going into the playoffs? 30. Stahl, Kennedy, Cook. That may be the best third line in all of hockey right there, folks. Vitali, heads up. Adams and Asham. Orpik, McCulloch, Martin Letang, Streit, and Derek Englund. Those are your lines for the 8 o'clock Eastern game tonight. That's your that's a 7:30 game. The Flyers.
7:30.
Yeah. Pittsburgh.
There's been so much attention put on the fact that you know, the Fleury versus Bridgegalov thing. How do you slow down the Malkin line? Sid, the whole thing. This series could come down to one thing and one thing only, which is, do the Flyers' youth corps at the bottom part of their lineup outplay the truculent, veteran, gritty, sandpapery players that the Penguins put out in their lower lines? Because the Flyers enter the series with a lot of young players, guys that have never had the taste of Stanley Cup playoff hockey quite yet.
It is true. I'm curious, and you always, you know, wonder what happens with young hockey players. You know, you have the playoffs gives you enough rope to either swing or hang. You can one or the other, and the choice is all yours. And a lot of it is just based on, you know, how you can control your nerves, right? And how many big games have you been in before. So curious to see how, well, I mean, Giroux's been there before, but Braden Schenn specifically, Matt Reed. What a great story Matt Reed was this year for the Philadelphia Flyers. Sean Couturier, he was supposed to still be in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. He was supposed to be traded from Drummondville to Shawinigan to play in the Memorial Cup this year, but
those
all of a sudden,
made
bing!
Up names.
They are names from Quebec, sir. Drummondville, the Voltigeurs, and Shawinigan is the Cataracts. Come on, they're hosting the Memorial Cup this year. And on the on the, the yeah. Go ahead, go ahead. I was gonna say
the
on the Pittsburgh
game.
Side, curious about Vitaly.
Oh, I was gonna say, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm done. I'm finished. We're talking over each other.
I was gonna move on to the next series. I didn't know if there was anything left to say about the Pittsburgh Penguins. And besides, if we keep talking about them, the chances are greater that we're gonna get fined.
Hey, anything? Do you hear anything about Roenick last night? We ran it on Sportsnet Connected all night long. I don't know if you saw that, but did
oh,
you
really?
Get any trouble?
I didn't realize that it made the big show. It made the big network?
Hells wow. Yeah. First thing I did was call our assignment desk and say, well, we kind of have a little bit of tasty audio here from Ye Olde Podcast this afternoon. You might want to give it a boo. So, yeah, that ran,
well,
that ran
straight
last
and
night.
Tie.
Yeah, look at
a
you.
Little,
I know.
A little podcast that could.
Do we know that
Darren Helm
anything?
Returns. Yeah. No, I didn't hear anything at all. No, Darren Helm returns from the Red Wings. They play the Nashville Predators tonight, the 8 o'clock game. That should boost their lower line production. So, again, do you put much stock into Game 1 of the series? Do we find out anything about the series in Game 1, sir, or is this going to be a marathon?
No, I don't think so. I think this is shaping up to be a long series. I would be shocked if it was four and done either way. Wouldn't you be? I think that, you know, this is a game that, that Nashville probably should win. Although, you know, the interesting thing about game ones and, you know, if you could, this is always, you know, we'll ask Terry Crisp this, you know, former Stanley Cup coach with the Calgary Flames, Stanley Cup champion with the Philadelphia Flyers. If you had the option, whether, and if you hold, you know, you hold home serve, okay, let's just assume you're holding home serve, but if you had the option to play game one either at home or on the road, I wonder how many coaches would say, you know what, I don't want the pressure of game one at home, I'll open that one on the road. Mm-hmm. I wonder how many coaches would take that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. And again, I find it so intriguing, the Red Wings entering this series, not only as the underdog, but almost as an afterthought in the eyes of a lot of people that are just so high on Nashville, treating Nashville like they're the flavor of the year.
They've
been building towards this. I know, but I mean, they're the Red Wings, for God's sakes.
Okay. Wish. What? Okay. As far as moves go this year, as far as, you know, following a narrative, following a team bill, because, you know, you saw David Poile putting pieces in place, mm-hmm. and then, boom, the big ones at the end of the season, Alexander Radulov, what? All of a sudden, Radulov mm-hmm. is part yep. of the mix. What did Detroit do this year? Did Detroit make trades?
Nope. But slow and steady wins the race, you see.
But that's the point. Like, there wasn't a narrative to follow with the Detroit Red Wings all season long.
Yeah,
and there wasn't the narrative is this is an excellent team. We've always been an excellent team. This year is no different than the last 3 years. Ho hum. It's the excellent Detroit Red Wings.
Over in the final, the game for this evening, the LA Kings at the Vancouver Canucks. A couple of interesting little news and notes from this thing. Obviously, the big news that Daniel Sedin not skating, probably out for game one. We'd have to agree, yeah.
How about his dad?
His dad saying he's out for game one, or that he shouldn't play in game one.
Gave it up. The scoop wasn't even James Reimer's mom this time. It was Sedin's dad that gave it up. Saying, he's not.
Yeah, Sedin's dad evidently trading notes with Cabrera's father as far as influencing the news cycle. So Sedin, unlikely to play in game one. If you hear this after game one and he does play, well, we just go with the information that we have available to us at podcast time. Jeff Carter is leaning towards, I think, game one from all the indications from the LA media. The other interesting thing, that not about this series per se, but about the LA Kings, Sportsnet reporting today that Luke Robitaille has been contacted about the vacant general manager position with the Montreal Canadiens. What do you think about that?
Yep. Not exactly a surprise. I don't know that I necessarily see Luke Richardson. Robitaille, Luke Richardson, jeez, Ottawa, God bless him. Luke Robitaille, God, get it right, stays a whole long time, with the Los Angeles Kings, to be honest with you. And I think he does have eyes for a general manager position. And with Serge Savard there, they are very comfortable going with a quote unquote rookie general manager. That's why, Julien Brisebois will get significant attention. That's why Luke Robitaille will get significant attention. And that's why, you know who else will get some attention as well, although I don't think he takes it considering what's happening in his life right now? Vincent Damfus will get some significant attention from Serge Savard of the Montreal Canadiens. So
Mark Bergevin, too, yeah?
Oh, from Chicago, absolutely. I think, yeah. I think if you're gonna handicap it, I think you go Bergevin, I think you go Julien Brisebois as well. I think those are the two. And yeah. with both of those, more so Brisebois than Bergevin, you probably have to bring in a director of player personnel. But that's cool. I think
there's a certain rock star element to both Robitaille and Brisebois that Bergevin doesn't have. Would you agree with that?
More so Robitaille.
Well, he's a star, but with Brisebois, it's more like the age thing, right? Like, he'd be like the Theo Epstein of the
yeah,
Habs.
It's age thing, and he's been there before. Like, he's familiar with the market. He was a capologist for Bob Gainey for a number of years. He helped, you know, manage the nickels and the dimes to fit everyone into under the salary cap for Bob Gainey. So it's not it would be like the local boy comes home. To run the show. Last time, you know, they wouldn't give him the keys to lock up. Now, they give him the keys to lock up, the keys to the Chevy. Go ahead, take a long weekend if you want. And take as many vacation days as you choose.
Before we do the intro, anything, do the Kings have to win game one to set the tone, or can they lose game one and still win the series?
I think they can lose as long as they stay competitive with the Vancouver Canucks. Like, I think a win in a lot of ways for the Vancouver Canucks is A, a win, or B, you know, hang right in with them for the full three periods and start to put the seeds of doubt, not just in, you know, the Vancouver Canucks head, but the Vancouver Canucks head, Vancouver fans head, as it relates to you know who between the 4x6.
I'll go one. I think the only way you plant seeds of doubt is if you win the damn game. I think they got to take game one to win the series, personally. And I think they also need to take game one with a very strong performance by Jonathan Quick, who, despite being the best goalie of the regular season, needs to prove something in the postseason. And you need to get that out of game one as well. All right,
quick point about that.
Please.
It would be better for the Los Angeles. We think this is going to be a close series. And if it is, let's say this is a 1-0 game. It's better for the Los Angeles Kings to lose a 1-0 game where the first goal is scored in the first period as opposed to the first goal being scored in overtime. You don't want to send them into game two on an emotional high if you're Los Angeles. That's all.
There you go. That makes sense. All right, with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's a hockey, you know, it's only a game. Why you have to be mad?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sabine is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Coming up in a second, we'll get Dave Staples from the Edmonton Journal talking about the Edmonton Oilers again winning the draft lottery. Can you believe
that?
Wow. You know.
And not since the Quebec Nordiques. Oh, we've all heard the story before. Matt Sundin, Owen Nolan, Eric Lindros, it turned into Peter Forsberg. That allowed the Avalanche to make the trade for Patrick Roy after the move was made, and Stanley Cups abounded in the city of the Avs. Have we seen a team hold serve for three seasons in a row?
To really understand the epic, moment that was the Edmonton Oilers winning the draft lottery. You must experience what it felt like to win the draft lottery. Oh. This is from a video that was on Puck Daddy today via Deadspin, via Martini Hockey. This is a collection of Columbus Blue Jackets fans watching the lottery last night, and it sounded a little something like this.
You're just so mean.
Yay! Ooh, yeah.
We want the guy I've never seen play hockey before.
Fail for now.
Fail for now.
How about just fail? Oh my God. Oh man. You know what that is, Wish? You know what that is? That's like that moment on Montel when Montel looks at the couple and says, he's not the father.
What? Oh, you mean, Maury. Yeah. Oh Earl God. Maury, you're right. Yeah. It is the DNA test. They are not the father of the top pick of the draft. Oh, that's brutal.
Oh man. Hey, listen. This is, if you're the Columbus Blue Jackets, listen, you've had a challenging year, I know. You couldn't trade Rick Nash. How can you not trade Rick Nash? How can you not find someone, to trade, Rick Nash for? And then you don't get the first overall draft pick. It's not the worst possible thing to happen for the, it's this year specifically, it's not the worst possible thing to not have number one, because Yakupov is, well, no one really is a guarantee. really. You have as good a chance of getting the best player in the draft at number 2 as you do at number 1, as you do at 14, as you do at 10, as you do at 28, for crying out loud. It is just that season. Next year is going to be the bonanza for draft picks, whether it's Hunter Shinkaruk or Sean Monahan or Nathan McKinnon or Curtis Lazar. These are like the franchise-type guys. This year's a very good draft. Next year is an excellent draft. Don't worry about bailing on this one.
Well, that said, congratulations to the Edmonton Oilers for winning the first pick overall. And joining us now on the line, he is a writer for the Edmonton Journal. He writes the Cult of Hockey blog, veteran blogger, I'd have to say. He is Dave Staples, and he joins us here on Merrick vs. Wyshynski. Hello, Dave.
Hello, gentlemen.
So what is the vibe out there in Oilerland as far as getting the first overall pick? Is it more along the lines of let's trade this sucker and fill in the blanks this year versus the other previous years, or is there still an appetite to go ahead and use it?
The vibe is somewhere between ecstasy and euphoria. This is our Stanley Cup.
Wow.
This is as good as it gets in Edmonton the last 2 years. I mean, it is tough. It was a tough month being an Oilers fan. These last 6 or 7 games were brutal. So to have to, you know, if you're a dedicated follower of the team, you're watching these games, it's like, what am I doing? So this was unexpected. To get this, the Oilers had, I think, 18-19% chance of getting it. No one was really counting on it. Mm-hmm. So there's initial glee from fans in terms of this, because there's also one player who was head and shoulders, I believe, in this draft, according to the scouts, above all the other players, in Yakupov. So it's a significant move to go from 2 or 3 to the number 1 selection. In terms of what to do with the pick, you know, the blogosphere, the blogs are about the Oilers are a notoriously prickly, disagreeable bunch, and I'm one of them. So there's going to be plenty of fighting and debates, but I think that there's going to be more of a consensus this time that Yakupov is the guy you're going to take. And that's what I saw on the on Twitter last night. Not much discussion, really. It's all about Yakupov. And also a belief that he'll make the team. And I think it's partly because this is the reality. We've had Nugent Hopkins and Hall make the team. But also, Yakupov has the KHL option. So I don't really know how serious an option it could be to send him back to junior, because he could just go to Omsk or Irkutsk or something like that, and the Oilers can't have that happen.
Well, and Grigorenko's in the same boat, Dave, as you all know. If they do decide to join their NHL team sooner than later, they'll take a pay cut right off the hop, because their KHL teams will pay them more for their rookie first 3 years. I do wonder, now that Edmonton holds the hammer, and it would be tempting to just select Yakupov, and boy, the first line is going to be, you know, Ryan Nugent Hopkins and Eberle and Hall, and all of a sudden Yakupov becomes a second line winger with Sam Gagne, and holy smokes, and Hemsky's there for 2 more years. It's a pretty stacked team, but my point out of all of it is, it's a pretty stacked team. Like, this team is starting to look like Dolly Parton pretty fast, and we all know what needs to be done. There's something needs to happen with the blue line here, and there's someone who's right under Steve Tambellini's nose that he knows he can get a little bit later on in the draft. Let me paint a picture here for you. Let's say, and you know Kevin Lowe would love to squeeze this general manager in the you-know-whats, let's say Steve Tambellini does a deal with Brian Burke at number 5.
What?
Flip of picks and either Luke Shen or Jake Gardner, knowing that the guy after Yakupov that the Oilers might really want is Griffin Reinhart, who plays with the Edmonton Oil Kings. Has that been discussed? Do you think that's been debated at all? And does that make any sense?
That will be debated in Edmonton, and it will be seriously debated, and it will be even more pushed harder in Toronto, I believe, because I think it's a little bit of wishful thinking. I just don't see, and you know, Sam Pollock, the great Habs GM, always said, if you get the best player out of the deal, you win that trade. That's how you win in the NHL, by getting these superstar players. And with all due respect to Gardner and Shen, I don't believe they're in that category, and it's unlikely that the number 5 pick, if you look at it really seriously, how defensemen turn out in the top 10 rounds, it's a 50-50 proposition. It's a big risk. The sure bet, the smart bet, is on Yakupov, and I think that's where the Oilers will end up in the end, although there will be tons and tons and tons of discussion. The only trade I can see that makes sense for the Oilers is if someone is willing to give up an established stud young defenseman, a really, really strong young defenseman who's already on near all-star class. So, you know, maybe Tyler Myers, Oliver Ekman-Larsson from Phoenix.
That kind of guy, yeah.
You know, that's the deal that makes sense for the Oilers. Not kind of splitting this up into two smaller pieces, but to maybe even include something else with Yakupov and get a superior player. So I would suggest that that's the kind of move the Oilers should entertain, not this other thing, which I think will be really pushed hard by people in other cities who want the first pick, but doesn't make so much sense here in Edmonton.
Let me ask you another, if I can just follow up on that one, because the Washington Capitals have never been shy about turning their team into the Central Red Army squad. How about knowing that, you know, Kuznetsov and Yakupov played so well together at the World Hockey Championships, something involving one or maybe two of the young defensemen on the Washington Capitals, Orlov, I'm looking your direction, Carl Alsner, John Carlson, I'm looking your direction as well, and a flip of picks with the Washington Capitals.
Where do the Caps draft?
You can take the Colorado pick that they have for the Semyon Varlamov deal, that's at number 11. So then, you know what, you're still in the Griffin Reinhardt, Cody Ceci kind of area for selection, so maybe that gets a little sweeter for Steve. I mean, I'm doing this on the fly here.
Player. It depends how good you think Alsner is. You know, if you look at how much his coach trusts Alsner, Alsner is in that top class of defensemen. So that's getting more like it. You're getting warmer. Put it that way.
Hey, stepping away from the Oilers' perspective on this for a second. So this is obviously the third straight year they get the number one pick. Last time it was done was Quebec about 20 years ago. As a hockey fan, does it bother you that the same team gets the number one pick in three straight drafts? Isn't that an indication that they've not learned from their lessons and there's still a study in futility despite getting the help of winning the lottery the previous two seasons?
Yeah, you know it does, and I think there's a better method of giving out the number one pick. There, I was at the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. A guy called Adam Gold presented, and his idea is once you're mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, you start accumulating points, and the team that gets the most points at that end of the season, the worst team that gets the most point in that final stretch of the season, they win the first overall pick. So the Columbus would have been eliminated mathematically first, so they would have had more games to win and get that first overall pick. Then the Oilers were second. They would have had the second most games to get that first overall pick. So you'd see a real fight and a real impetus from those last place teams to win at the end of the year. And we wouldn't have this painful march in all of these NHL cities. There might be then the impetus to lose a little quicker, so you're mathematically eliminated quicker. But I don't really think that's how human psychology works, and I like Gold's idea quite a bit. And it will be, I think it's superior and more exciting than what we have now.
Or how about this for an option? And we saw this coming out of the last lockout. 30 teams, 30 balls. And the idea being that the salary cap is supposed to keep everyone even. We see relative parity across the National Hockey League. I don't recall a more exciting draft lottery than the one that was won by the Pittsburgh Penguins, much as Regina Brian Burke and the Anaheim Ducks in the Sidney Crosby draft. Why not 30 teams, 30 balls?
I don't mind the system where there is some effort to help these lower teams. I think that's a good idea for the NHL to spread the talent around and help out the lower teams, help them compete. I think from a fan perspective, that gives the fans of these low-ranked teams something to cheer about. And in Toronto, you know, if you had held on to those picks, you might have that feeling more. I think in Toronto there'll be quite a bit of excitement now to get the fifth pick. You're going to get a good player out of that. So I don't think, maybe 30 teams and then you'd have every team has one ball, but the last team has 30 balls, then the other one has 29, 28, 27, maybe something like that, where it's more weighted towards the weaker teams. But I do think it works for the league and works for the fans to have the weaker teams pick up the best players, generally speaking, in the draft.
Yeah, I don't know if the internet and or law enforcement would be prepared if the Penguins won the Stanley Cup and then won the draft lottery in the same season.
No, but this was actually Ed Snyder was the first to speak vocally about this. The idea is that, well, sure, you get the first overall draft pick, and even if you win the Stanley Cup and you end up with that first overall draft pick, the salary cap precludes you, from putting together that juggernaut team. So if you're already capped out and you get the first overall draft pick and he's going to max out at $3.5 million per season on his cap hit, then it's going to cost you someone off your roster, i.e. the salary cap internally has a way of correcting any team from quote-unquote loading up. That's all.
I don't really believe that though, because there's an economic advantage having younger players on your team. You don't have to pay them their true value.
Right.
So you get these young players, and you get about 7 years at paying them at a cheaper rate. And I don't think the salary cap's going to even that out. And plus, not all teams can spend at the top of the cap. That's certainly a self-serving argument for Mr. Snyder, who can spend at the top of the cap every year and also has a good team every year. And there's, you know, he wants merited teams to get good players. I can see that. But I don't think it works for, of course, I'm making a self-serving argument as an Edmonton Oilers fan. And I don't like tanking. I do think it's actually quite a solid strategy to tank in the NHL. If you're a weak team, I don't agree with Brian Burke on this. I think, you know, he made a big mistake about 2 or 3 years ago when he started to build that team too rapidly. He would have been better served to stay low for a year or two. The Maple Leafs fans would have forgiven that strategy, and Toronto would be better off right now.
But there's no guarantee that works, though. See Columbus and see Minnesota. I mean, they've been bottom feeders for all Brian Burke had to say to save himself yesterday, really, Dave, when it comes down to it, says, you know what? The Pittsburgh model is one model, and it worked for Pittsburgh, and it worked for Chicago, but it hasn't worked for Columbus,
yeah, but
it, and it hasn't worked for Minnesota.
Instead, he said, I'm a prideful, impatient individual. Yeah. And it comes off as him being too stubborn to actually build a championship team. Is what?
Yeah, you know, you're right. And lots of people in Edmonton have, you know, because the Oilers management holds up Chicago, Pittsburgh, and then everyone says, "What about Atlanta? What about Columbus?" And that's perfectly correct. Now, the Edmonton model, the new Edmonton model, is Quebec City. So that they're the last team to get 3 first in a row. So that means we will lose our team within 3 years and we'll win a Stanley Cup in another city.
Well, last one for me, kind of playing off that historical perspective, though, dude, is, you know, you brought up the salary cap, and who knows where this whole thing's going in the next CBA. But, I mean, is there a sense of there only being a window here with these kids in Edmonton? I mean, at some point, they're going to go UFA, and they're going to go UFA en masse. Now, granted, this is all great news for the New York Rangers, who will undoubtedly go and pluck all of these kids away from the Oilers, much like they did the championship players back in the early 1990s. But is there a sense of there only being a window here, or is there a sense that we're going to be able to hang on to these guys and not have to eventually make the Taylor Hall or Jordan Eberle decision?
This, you just jabbed like the big raw nerve ending of Edmonton, right? Like what happened to the great Oilers teams? Can we never keep our star players in Pronger and all of this? You know, I do think that great players will stay in cities that aren't the most desirable locations necessarily weather-wise, such as Detroit and Edmonton, if they're on great teams and great organizations. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that Daryl Cates, the Oilers owner, has been going through quite a learning curve in how to win in the NHL, but the guy has money. The guy, we are going to be seeing an outstanding, maybe the best arena built in the NHL coming to Edmonton. So I think that this franchise is going to be able to pay the players, have a great facility, a great owner, and that might change the dynamic in Edmonton. So, there is a kind of a salary cap window, but in terms of all the other things going on, I think people in Edmonton hope that those problems have been solved and Edmonton can retain its star players.
Dave, last one for me, and thanks for so much for coming on this afternoon to break it down for us. What, considering he's an RFA on July 1st, what's the decision the Oilers have to make with Sam Gagner?
It's the toughest decision because there's a possibility that to fit Yakupov on the team, you might move Taylor Hall to center. I think that's a real possibility. You know, you have Hall and RNH as your top two guys. You're just really strong down the middle. That said, Gagner has taken a demonstrable step up on the team. He had a much better season, played with more grit than he's ever played before. So he's heading in the right direction. I think that what you do is you re-sign them. You go with the young guys you have, and the guys who don't work out, you trade off. You know, there could also be injury problems, as we've seen in other cities with great talent. Injuries can destroy a team. So it could all work out, and I think the best thing is to keep the guys who are performing well, sign them up for as long as you can, as long as it's a reasonable contract, and go with the guys who are performing the best and stay healthy.
Dave Staples, one of the MVPs of the Oilauger sphere and a guy who writes great stuff and captains a great ship over on Cult of Hockey. Thank you, sir, for joining us here on Merrick vs. Wyshynski.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Dave Staples.
Dave Staples hits the nail on the head, by the way, and pardon the Yakupov pun.
Wah.
But I was thinking the same thing last night, that if they wind up drafting Yakupov 1, That is Taylor Hall, the center. That's the only solution. If you're going to have that collection of forwards on your roster at the same time, you've got to move Hall to center. That makes the most sense, doesn't it?
It does, unless you're going to look at packaging up that pick. And again, Tambellini yesterday kept every door open, every possibility open as well, because, you know, this team needs, you know, Oscar Klefbom is probably the best prospect on the horizon for the Edmonton Oilers. David Musil is up there as well, Martin Marincin, but there's no one, like the one place they need help. Now they think they have the guy in Devan Dubnyk. The one place they need help right away is on the blue line. And I really think you can do, considering how defense heavy this year's draft is, maybe even just do a quickie move down, take the number two pick away from Columbus, flip picks. Yeah, there you go, Columbus. You get Nel Yakupov. Are y'all happy now? You saw what happened the last two times you grabbed Russians in the first round, and you do something to grab one of their defensemen, or you do something with a defenseman, and then you grab Ryan Murray from Everett, captain of the Everett Silvertips. I mean, there's ways to do this, and ways to make your team better on the blue line.
Last thing for me on Edmonton. I'm not an Oilers fan, obviously. I'm not going to speak on behalf of Oilers fans, but I got to imagine there must have been a tug of war of emotions seeing them win the draft lottery and then seeing Tambellini with that shit-eating grin on his face, knowing that this guy's mismanagement is one of the reasons why you've gotten three number one picks in a row. It's got to be a conflict of feelings a little bit in seeing this whole thing go down the way it did.
Wasn't Tambellini, didn't James Duthie ask him that yesterday, sort of in a roundabout way, you know, Or maybe Tambellini said, no, I mean, Tambellini said last year, I hope I don't see you next year. Well, here you are 1 year later. And there's Steve Tambellini. It is a tough spot for that general manager. On the one hand, hey, you just won the lottery. On the second hand, hey, you've been there now for 3 years in a row. That means you're not really doing your job.
Before we get to Terry Crisp, real quick, the question of the day, give us one rock-solid prediction for the playoffs, one rock-solid prediction of something that will happen in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You send it to puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com, @Wyshynski or @JeffMerrick on Twitter, #@MVSW. But now we must get to the man who will break down the Predators and Red Wings with expertise and aplomb.
Yes, he is a former Stanley Cup winner as a player with the Philadelphia Flyers under Fred Shiro. He is a Stanley Cup winner as a head coach himself with the 1989 Calgary Flames. He is an analyst for the Nashville Predators alongside one of our favorites, Pete Weber. He is, of course, Terry Crisp. He joins us now. Terry, how are you, sir?
You know what, gentlemen? I was great, and I was really feeling good until you threw out expertise in that last word, a plump. And I don't know who that guy is, who he plays for, so I'm not even going to touch on him.
He's a left winger from Russia.
You just forgot the OV on the end of it.
Yeah, the scouts say he shows promise, but he lacks focus, Terry. Tell me the last time you heard that about a Russian prospect. Hey,
that was the last time I used it.
Tell your thoughts on this series, and Greg and I were talking a second ago, Terry, about how crucial or perhaps how not crucial game ones are in the playoffs. Talk to us as a coach here. If you could still hold serve and have home ice, would you rather open up a series at home or on the road?
You know, as a coach, a lot of times in the first part of the season, you want to open on the road to get all the kinks out of your team and all the kinks out of your special teams, et cetera, and see what guys can do. In playoffs, you know what? I don't think it's that big a deal. Everybody makes a big deal about home ice advantage. And like Trotsky and Babcock and Hitch and all those guys say, you know what becomes big? When you get to the seventh game and you got it in your building, then you figure you have a bit of an edge. Then you think you might have it with the crowd behind you, familiar surroundings, your dressing room, et cetera, and so forth. Other than that, I've been in the game so long to know that if you think you're going to hang your hat on home ice, then you're in for a big disappointment, because there's a lot of guys out there, a lot of teams that can come into your building and take that away in one quick game. And say Detroit takes it away tonight. Just happens they win the game here. Does that mean that we're finished? Does that mean that Coach Trotz throws in the towel? Not a bit. We know it's a stupid question, but no, they don't. So home ice, nah, you know what? Just have your team prepared to play.
Is it kind of a weird situation, though, from a Nashville perspective to be the favorite in this? I mean, they're the favorite in seeding. I also think they've got a little bit more mojo as far as the punditry goes, people picking Nashville, saying that they've been building towards this, and almost at the expense of the Detroit Red Wings. Is it an odd position to be in from someone who's been covering this team for as long as you have?
It's sort of odd because we've always held Detroit as our mentors. We've held Detroit, meaning the Nashville Predators organization, as the bar that we want to attain. the bar that we have to reach, knowing full well if we're going to go anywhere and be a good team, that one of the teams we had to beat every year in our division to move on through was the Detroit Red Wings. So that's what we've been gearing for all along. Alex Thornton, when I was coaching in Calgary and Cliff Fletcher was running that hockey club, the Edmonton Oilers were the team we knew that we had to get by. If we were going anywhere, the road went through Edmonton. Well, plus it went through Detroit. And yeah, for us to be the one, but then the Coach Trott says in all of his scrums, media scrums, he said, listen, come on. We were fourth, they were fifth. Well, how many points did you have separating us? He says, let me think about this. He says, we had 104, Detroit had 102. Oh, yeah, we really whipped up on them, didn't we? We really lambasted them in the standings. So, being very honest, there's not a lot of pick or choose. We're probably proudest, like Trotsky says, that our organization has matured and we've come of age and we're now legit, but that's about where it stands.
You know, out of all the final pieces, Terry, that David Poile put together this year, you know, you mentioned the team has grown together. You know, this team has done such a great job drafting and developing. Milwaukee's been a great AHL affiliate for you guys. Considering that that's how this team has grown organically, always you put in some final pieces the year you're going to take a shot at it. Gill, Kostitsyn, Gostad, Radulov at the end of the season. Which one is the most important in your estimation for the playoff run?
Oh, man. You know what? I'm going to go back to my farming days up north and say, if I give you a three-legged milking stool and one of them falls, which one's the most important? Now, you two think about that and argue about it for a minute. And people out there say, what's he talking about? That's Coach's lingo to figure out. Bill Shuler would throw that one at you guys.
All right, so we'll dodge and deflect on that one. Who has most impressed you, Terry, of those gentlemen that I just mentioned?
You know what, Hagel. I mean, Andre Kostitsyn, we haven't had him that long, but he showed great good skill up front, having the puck, what we're looking for. Yip came in and added some grit to us. When he came rattle off, of course, he's going to be the one they're going to watch because this guy's exciting. He's an explosive player. He's the player we've been looking for. He's a game breaker. But the guy who's been the steadiest in the dressing room, off the ice, practices with young players, Hal Gill. And I think it's because he's been around the years that he's played. He's won a Stanley Cup, but he's just so very calm in his attitude towards the game, how he plays it, how he talks not only to veterans, but to the young players. So I would have to go with the addition that I like with the David Poile made with Hal Gill. And, you know, Gostad, face-offs, yes, but let's go. I'll give you this, the one leg on the stool I'm looking for is Gill.
I love this, the milking stool analogy here. If I can follow up on that one too, because this does actually, Terry, speak to, not necessarily. I've never been a farmer a day in my life, but nonetheless, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool city slicker guy, although I just bought a house and I'm moving up to Stouffville. Terry, you know, your 1989 Calgary Flames, to my memory, correct me if I'm wrong, was the last team to win the Stanley Cup that outside of the coaching staff didn't have any Stanley Cup rings in the dressing room. Is that why you like Hal Gill so much? He's the one guy on this team that's won the Stanley Cup before. The guys can look to and turn to and say, this guy's been there before. He's that wizened guy, been around the National Hockey League. That's one question. And two, how the heck, Terry, did you in 1989, with only one ring in the room, and that was yours, win the Stanley Cup with a bunch of kids that had never won the Stanley Cup before in 1989?
You know, you're asking about Hal Gill and the Stanley Cup. No. I don't even like that, because if we're going to go that route, Detroit has 20 Stanley Cup rings in their room. That means we're dead in the water. We're finished. Don't even start the series. No, you know what? I love a guy that's been through the wars and has won it and can stand up and say, you know what, guys? Here's what I love when I say. When you win one, you think you're going to win five. But you know what happens sometimes when you win that one? It's the last crack you ever get at it. And you think that it's bowl of cherries. You're going to get back in here again. You're going to grab the brass ring the next year or 2 years. It doesn't come around again. And that's the message I love when guys who have won a ring come in and do it. In 89, when we didn't have anybody, think about this. We didn't have one guy pulling on our jersey that had ever won a Stanley Cup ring. Think how hungry they were. Think how hungry these guys were. A lot of them had been there in 86 and lost it to Montreal when Badger Bob had the hockey club. And this was their second go-around in 89, a couple years later. And I think a lot of them remembered that, you know what, it doesn't come back that quickly for you. Grab that brass ring while you can. And if you're a lot of good coaches, Bowman, when they go towards the trading deadline, look for players, they'll find veteran players who have not won it, who are still hungry at the end of their career, and their one last kick at the can is to win the cup this year.
You know, it's interesting you bring up the window of opportunity thing, because I think that's a weird common theme between these two teams for different reasons. Obviously, Detroit's getting a little bit older, getting towards the end, probably Holmstrom's last year, Lidstrom probably in his last couple of years. And then you've got Nashville, who's got their own window that might be closing depending on what happens with this free agency. So how much of the future of the Predators vis-a-vis Suter and Weber, how much of that is kind of a subplot to the emotions going into these playoffs?
If you're being honest, a lot. I mean, yeah. It means a lot to this organization. David Poile's aware of it. The owners are aware of it. The players, the fans, the media. You can't just, when you have your Pecorines and your Webbers and your Suters and your Fishers all in place, that's what you're looking for. Four or five core guys you build, you hope to keep. And when they start to leave you, to go away, it's tough to replace. It's tough to rebuild and get back in that mojo again. So it's huge. It's tremendous that our organization makes sure that Rene and Weber and Suter and Fisher and these guys remain Predators and do what you can do to do it. But again, you know what, fellas? And I love it. But the players have the ultimate say. The players have their destiny in their hands with their agents, and they can say yay or nay, and that's what it hinges on.
At the same time, too, it's fueled on by the coaches and fueled on by the fans. And, you know, Terry, you played – geez, Terry, you played in the spectrum. I mean, you played with some raucous fans in Philadelphia. How would you compare the Philadelphia Flyers fans of 74-75 to the Nashville Predators fans now, which, as we've seen in the past few seasons, have a very unique and very loud identity of their own?
They have been. You know what? I could compare them so easily because of the fact that they all love their team. They love their hockey and they love their city. But there's nothing that will ever replace the Nashville Predator fans. Right now, I consider our Nashville Predator fans the best in the league. Anywhere we go, any building, I love them. They support the team. But I'm going to go one step backwards. The Philadelphia Flyer fans, I've never seen anything like them. I mean, they scared you into winning. I mean, they might have scared the other team coming into our building. They scared us, the home team, even more that they wouldn't accept any kind of losing whatsoever. So looking back over my career, hey, the fans in Philadelphia, I love you.
All right, real quick, last one for me, Terry. What's your take on the Western Conference as a whole? I mean, do you see any upset potential in Vancouver and L.A. or the Blues and the Sharks or over in that Phoenix Blackhawks series?
You know what? I'm going to be very honest, guys. If I was a coach, I was coaching in the Western Conference, there's no such thing as an upset. Any team that knocks the other team off is not an upset, because the hockey that they've been playing coming down the stretch run, the 2 and 3 points, the 1 points, the 2 points separating them, all the way to the last, third last game, second last game, you can't consider it an upset. Yeah, Vancouver took the President's Trophy, but they didn't run away with it. They were being chased by St. Louis. New York was on top of them. Other teams were chasing them. You know what? I wouldn't call any series in the West, no, I wouldn't even use the word upset. I wouldn't embarrass myself going on the air doing that.
Terry, last one for me, and I want to go a little bit back into your biography, because I think it relates to, you know, we talked about you coaching in 1989 and winning the Stanley Cup with the Calgary Flames. I've always wanted to ask you this. I think it was 1976. This is one of the weirdest demotions I've ever seen in the NHL. You got sent down from the Philadelphia Flyers to the Springfield Indians, not to play, but to coach. Jack Hanna, I think, was in a car accident, and you were sent down by the Flyers organization to coach. Is that where you got the coaching bug, and why did you, of all people, get selected to go down and coach?
I have no idea. It's a great question, because I was actually getting ice time. I was actually on the line playing in the NHL, and Keith Allen, the GM, says, "Crispy, you're going down to Springfield." I said, "But Keith, I'm playing good. I'm playing well. I'm killing penalties." I mean, no. He said, "You're going down to coach." I said, "Coach? Coach, I'm a player. I'm playing. Who's talking about Keith?" No. He says, "John Hanna got hit by a half-ton truck." By the way, the truck had more damage than John Hanna did, but it broke his hip. And he said, "You're going down because we were putting players with Washington and us." I said, "I'm not a coach." He says, "You are now." So they shipped me down to Springfield for a month just at Christmas time. And that's why I call Keith Allen Santa, because that was my Christmas present from Keith Allen. Go down to Springfield and coach for a month. And then come back, and true to word, they brought me back, guys. But I got to tell you, it was an interesting time at that given time. As a player, going down to coach players from Washington and from our own Philadelphia team.
Yeah. I think Brian Burke was on that squad. Steve Coates with the Philadelphia Flyers was on that squad. Tom Rowe, now going over to coach in Russia, was on that team.
We had, yeah, they had a lot of good players down there. But again, when you first walk in the dressing room, you're thinking, what the heck? I'm a player. Now, suddenly overnight, I'm a coach. I'm trying to think of the player that was in Washington that almost killed me about 2 weeks earlier, run over top of me and almost killed me. And he was in the dressing room. And I went up and asked him, I said, you remember you always, yeah. I said, well, listen, I just want to tell you, you know, I'm coaching now. It's a different thing. And I hold a grudge.
That's awesome, Terry. Best of luck. Our best to Pete Weber. Enjoy the series against the Red Wings.
Thanks, fellas. It's a great time for all of our fans out there. It's playoff time. Enjoy it.
It is. Awesome. Thanks, Terry. Terry Crisp, analyst for the Nashville Predators. Yeah, the story was what? Jack Hanna. Jack Hanna. It's a. He was a pretty tough defenseman in his day. He's coaching the Springfield Indians, and he got lost on his way to the rink. He's driving, he just got lost on the radio. So he saw a cop car on the side of the road. He thought, oh, I'm going to stop and I'm going to ask the cop. So he pulls up behind the cop car, to ask him directions to the arena. And he steps out of the car. And the minute he steps out of a car, like this big, huge, you know, truck just blindsides him and smashes his hip in like a million pieces.
Wow.
And then that's where Terry Crisp got the call. Can you imagine that? Like having a general manager, like, pick a team, which the New Jersey Devils, like Lou Lamoriello. Beat Lou Lamoriello, and you say you're telling David Clarkson, yeah, he's going down to the AHL.
Everybody collapse in front of Marty. Marty needs help. Collapse in front of him.
It's imagine telling like one of your players on the team, yeah, we're sending you to the minors, but coach, I'm playing well. Yeah, well, we need a coach, and you're going to be the guy.
That's amazing.
Imagine that happening for a second.
I also love. I don't know what it is about Terry Crisp, but when you ask Terry Crisp a question, and his immediate response is, oh, I have no idea. For some reason, it's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
You know, my favorite, sort of, you know, personal little, quirk that someone has, we gotta get Grant Fuhr on the program. You know why? He starts every answer like this. Well, well, everything is well, comma, and then he gets into it.
That's great. Funny. That's awesome.
Ever tell you a story about how he sold a rental car? Do you know that one?
Did you ever tell that on the show, or did you tell me?
I don't think so.
All right, go and tell it on the show. Yeah, can you tell?
Oh no,
on the
it's just a simple one. Yeah, it's a great story. That's Grant Fuhr, you know, riding with the Edmonton Oilers, you know, Stanley Cups, top of the league, rock and roll. Rented a car. I don't know if he forgot that he rented it or not, but they came looking for it a while later, and Grant's like, "Oh yeah, I sold that thing. Got a great deal on it. Sold a rent car. Rent a car. Sold."
Hey, you know, it's funny.
It's awesome. I love hockey.
Before we go on to something about the coaches here in the playoffs, this is from the Phoenix Business Journal. Okay. An ownership group led by former San Jose Sharks CEO Greg Jamieson is again moving closer to buying the Phoenix Coyotes hockey team and keeping it in Glendale. The Glendale City Council met in a private session Tuesday to discuss three bidders interested in buying the Coyotes in the NHL. The city is moving forward with Jamieson's group as the preferred bid and is looking to work out an arena lease deal in the next few weeks. Thoughts?
This thing has been false started so many different times, I'll believe it when I see it.
Do you find it interesting that this news breaks right as the Coyotes are beginning their playoff in juxtaposition to what happened last year where it was basically, hey, by the way, you're moving to Winnipeg. Good luck against the Red Wings.
Good luck. Go take on Pavel Datsyuk, Henrik Zetterberg, and Nick Lidstrom. You're going to Winnipeg next year. Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. Perhaps. Yeah. I mean, I refuse to nibble on any bait, with the Phoenix Coyotes. And just knowing what all the pitfalls are and knowing how tough and challenging it will be to make money with that team under that, you know, lease agreement with the rink. God bless anyone that wants to take it on, unless you have a parachute clause in it whereby you can get out sooner than later. I don't know who would take this on,
I think you're doing the right thing because the Phoenix Business Journal, they are masturbators. And lest you take that bait, sir, and get distracted from the big news, which is the Stanley Cup playoffs. And when we talk about
playoffs,
let's talk real quick about the coaches in the playoffs.
Okay.
Are there any coaches, in your estimation, sir, that are on the hot seat if their teams do not succeed?
I see three. I see, well, Dale Hunter's gone either way. Are we on the same page about that?
Yeah,
he's
I agree
to
with that.
It than I am. So he's running back to London. Tell some stories with the Knights and his brother Mark Hunter. Down 2-1 to Saginaw, by the way. Brandon Saad, all you Chicago Blackhawks fans, is lighting up in the playoffs. I can see Joel Quenneville being under the hot, on the hot seat right now and kind of under the gun. If they bow out, you just mentioned Phoenix, if they bow out against the Coyotes, I don't know that good things will happen with Joel Quenneville. And that may turn out to be good things for another franchise looking for a head coach, but more on that in a moment. We turn the microphone back to Wish. I think Todd McClellan as well. I think if San Jose goes out, as per your prediction, Mr. Wyshynski, Greg Wyshynski, Esquire, I say San Jose's out in how many games against the Blues? Six, did you say?
I said six games.
Yeah, then I think it's bad news for Todd McClellan. That volcano will want a virgin, and it might be McClellan.
So you think, even though, because I kind of believe that them making the playoffs may have spared him the execution,
no,
but you think he could still be the guy who has to pay for this?
Todd McClellan, yep, because the expectation wasn't just get into the playoffs. Oh, yeah. What were you talking about a couple of weeks ago? You say, well, it's like congratulating someone for cleaning up the mess that they made. And,
yeah.
You know, don't you kind of have that same vibe of the San Jose Sharks that they bow out in the first round? Like, oh, they got to the playoffs. Well, you're supposed to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, it was the old Chris Rock routine of being a good dad, congratulating somebody for being a good dad.
Oh, yeah,
you're
I pay my bills.
You're supposed to take care of your kids.
Yeah, I pay my bills. You're supposed to pay your bills.
You're supposed to pay your bills. I think the other dynamic with McClellan and the Sharks is the fact that it's not as if they didn't try to go out and improve the team last summer. And you're not going to be able to take out Wilson, right? So you might be right. Like, he quote unquote improved the team after last season's conference championship run, right? And then fell back.
And gave up a key piece of their future, like a good young piece in Charlie Coyle to the Minnesota Wild. Like, this year they gave up, you know, Devin Sitoguchi, and they let go of Danny Heatley as well. But they did mortgage a lot of their future with players like Charlie Coyle and Devin Sitoguchi to bring in another right-hand shot defenseman in Brent Burns. So he gave him a chance. You know, he said,
so
all right.
Do you think he has to win around then to keep his gig?
Yep, absolutely.
Ooh, interesting.
Yep. I think San Jose needs two rounds of playoff gates. Yep.
Going to your Quenneville point, by the way, if he really is going to be turfed if they don't win the first round, there's been so much discussion here in D.C. about what the Capitals need as far as a coach. And Quenneville's everything that the Capitals need as far as a coach. He's got a ring. He's been around. He's he can give them structure. Now, granted, having several different options for goaltender with Joel Quenneville as your coach is not a good thing. But that said, him coming into D.C. I think would be the perfect guy for this collection. If the Capitals lose in round one, if the Blackhawks lose in round one, I couldn't imagine Quenneville not getting a sniff from the Caps.
Even if, and there is a general feeling around the NHL that this is what Dale Hunter was told. If Quenneville is told the same thing that Dale Hunter is told, can he be successful? And that thing is this. Joel, it's your team. Do whatever you want with it. But Ovechkin and Semin play. Hmm. Now go coach.
Depending on where Semin is next year.
Well,
tough call. All right. Rock solid guarantees for the playoffs. That was the question of the day. And your answers were these. This is from Peter Kirschenbaum. Someone will be fined for saying or doing something to the Penguins. Well, the die has been cast for the Pittsburgh Penguins. This one, Chris Kraft. The Pens will be called whiners. Mike Millibury will rant about something and then be forced to apologize for it. And Pierre Maguire will say something that will make all hockey fans wish that Mrs. Maguire would have drank about 20 beers and got, I can't do that.
Don't.
I can't do it. Oh,
too much
Chris,
for you?
Chris, man, you led me down the path of bad things with that email, sir. I can't go there. I did that Marty Brodeur's sister joke yesterday, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, holy smokes. That was, okay. From Ryan Sandry, Shea Weber will have a bushier beard tonight than most of the players who appear in the Stanley Cup Finals. That is probably true.
And what they're saying there, by the way, they're not saying that he's more of a man than everybody else. They're saying that he's a cheater, that he is a playoff beard cheater.
Just gets
a lot of these guys lay down a base before the playoffs. I am a student of the playoff beard, and I have seen this phenomenon in the last. You know, the guys use shoe shine to fill in the blanks. They start growing their beard in March, and they call it a playoff beard. I've seen all of this stuff.
Hey, you ever painted a house before?
I have.
Do you use primer? You prime before you paint. That's all he's doing. Yeah. He's putting on a base. That's all he's doing. That's all right. Oh, by the way, just we can get it.
Yeah,
just we can get in really quickly. Dmitry Chestnov tweets: "My tweets better make the show." There you go. That's all I wanted to say.
Oh,
hey DC,
there you go. Oh, when we run chats on Puck Daddy, and somebody's like, "Hey, why don't my messages get through?" And then I publish that one, and then I don't publish anything else after it, just to make people terrible.
Oh, by the way, on your chat last night, someone posing as me had the best line. I was going through your chat last night when the draft was going on, and someone posing as Jeff Merrick had fail for Kale. I did a spit take because I was sitting in the green room with Sportsnet. I'm like, oh,
you know what's
whoever
great about that?
Whoever you are, dude, that was hilarious.
Steve McAllister, my exalted editor at Yahoo, started like going back and forth with what he assumed was you last night during the chat.
Oh, did he?
But
awesome.
I didn't have the heart to tell it was fake Merrick. Andrew Jones, my prediction is that at least one team in each of the opening round matchups in the Western Conference will make a switch in net due to poor performance or to spark their respective squads. There could be a lot of that, actually, in the West, if you think about the way those goaltending tandems have worked. This is from Wade Melton. Kevin Bieksa will look for a European in a scrum and attack said European, as Bieksa is the Sir Robin of hockey who fought the vicious Dustin the Bufflin and personally wet himself at the notion of fighting anyone from Chicago except for Victor Stahlberg. Oh, what a take out of Bieksa.
Are you trying to say he picks his spots, sir? Are you really?
A little bit.
Well, sort of in that spirit as it relates to violence, from Peter Jessup. The inevitable quote, "There's no fighting in the playoffs, so why do we need it in the regular season?" argument will be raised. Now, mind you, this will be made while players are fighting in the playoffs. One of the great myths that is trotted out from the non-fighting crowd is that there is no fighting in the playoffs. Why do you need it in the regular season? Here's a hint. There are fights in the playoffs. You will see some tonight. You will see some tomorrow. There are fights in the playoffs. Are they the same volume as the regular season? No. But this idea that there are no fights in the playoffs is folly. It's just been said so many times that people think that it's true. It's not true. It's not true. Watch the games.
Marc-Andre, this is from Brian C. Marc-Andre Fleury will be pulled from more games in the first round than Roberto Luongo. Fleury in his last eight games has an .888 save percentage and a goals against over .300. Luongo is a .944 and a .178 goals against in the last six starts. I don't think Luongo's getting pulled in the first round. Like I said, I think Luongo gets pulled in Chicago or in Boston or against those teams, not necessarily against the Los Angeles Kings. Fleury, I've heard this argument time and time again about Marc-Andre Fleury and how poorly he's played recently. And some of that is part of these little annoying defensive lapses that the Penguins have had recently as well. But again, he's a money goalie. If you're going to stake your claim on a goalie in that series, are you going to go with Fleury or are you going to go with Bridgebob? You're going to go with Fleury, aren't you?
Fleury, hands down, not even close.
Thank you.
He's you know, some people would... Some sage people might even say if the Pittsburgh Penguins win the Stanley Cup, look for him to win the Conn Smythe.
Oh.
Polishes up nails.
By the way, just a question here. Do you think Brizgalov is getting a little crazy? Like Elena was pointing out in her preview on Puck Daddy the whole notion of now he's talking about bears attacking him and things like that. Like, he's not been the humongous space cadet that he's been in the last several months. Like, he's kind of potted it down and not been that guy and then played outstanding hockey, and now it seems like he's bought the crazy back at the wrong time.
Yeah, maybe. Or was that just, I mean, he was, you know, dodging and deflecting interviews and not, I'm sure when he went home and talked to his, you know, to his wife and his dogs, beautiful dogs, that he was that same, you know, crazy, you know, out there, old school fans will love this reference, modern day version of Gilles Gratton, netminder formerly the New York Rangers and St. Louis Blues and Toronto Torres of the WHA. Like, it's not like you just stop being the fly ball to left center field. He's always been that guy. He'll probably always been that guy, be that guy. But he just sort of toned it down around the media. Now the playoffs are on. You're right. Something has happened. Like, the raincoat has popped off all of a sudden, you know, and he's out there just running in the rain and splashing in the puddles right now. He's like, get this raincoat off me. Ah! I don't care. Ah, it's the playoffs. We'll see. Well, I mean, it starts tonight. We'll see which British Galoff shows up tonight for the Philadelphia Flyers.
A couple more here. Ivani the Terrible. Rock solid prediction. Crosby's playoff beard will not be pretty. This is so true. This is very true.
Karen Douglas, New York lose, and Torts has 30-second presser where he says he can't afford to talk but swears lots and gets fined.
Brian Abrams, as the New York Rangers fall to the Ottawa Senators, Milbury in a tirade about the level of Lundqvist's heart refers to him as Queen Henrik.
Oh, wow.
I can see that. I can see that, actually. This is from Mark Cole. Good point here, which is... my favorite Americanization of a European player is still Vinny Prospel. Agreed on that.
Yeah, that's true too. I'm surprised the Radix haven't been changed just to Ricks from now. What's the greatest North Americanization of a European name?
I think Vinny's pretty good.
Vaclav.
Bruce Matthews writes in, David Inglorious Bacchus will become a household name in cities outside of St. Louis, starting in San Jose. I believe
could be a coming out party
for Bacchus. Yeah.
For two players on that team, and we talked about David Perron yesterday. I think David Bacchus and David Perron could be the two that come out, and maybe Petrangelo. We'll see how he performs in the playoffs. The two that I'd say, listen, if St. Louis is going a long way, you're going to hear a lot of DP57, man, a lot of David Perron and a lot of David Bacchus as he becomes like the next big prototypical power forward in the NHL and delivers as such and shows why he's in the conversation for the Smythe Trophy or the Selke Trophy.
There you go. All right. Finally, from our good friend Dmitry Chesnikov,
DC
on Merrick versus Wyshynski. Wyshynski just majorly picked on me. This is war. Oh, if this is war, sir, we'll just arm the Afghanis. That's what we do when we fight the Russians. Wait, what?
Oh,
that's terrible. No, come on. I'm just talking about history.
Do you remember who was in charge then of the Afghanistanis at that point when they fought back the Soviet Union in 1980?
No, I don't at all. I don't believe it was him. I believe it was some other guy that sounded like him.
Okay, dare we say his name now that he is deceased?
Finally, from Dr. Whizbang, how about Rusty Olesh?
Yeah, that's another one. That's like Rusty Klesla. Rusty's the good one. Rutislav to Rusty. Wow. Does anyone name their kids Rusty? Rusty's a great name. Like I love the name of our two sons. Like TJ's a cool ass name, Trent James, and I really dig the name Brody, but man, Rusty's right up there. But does anyone call their kids Rusty anymore? You ever met a Rusty?
Are you trying to tell me that Neil Yakupov doesn't have a brother named Rusty?
Rusty
Yakupov? Rusty Neil, you get down here this instant!
Rusty? Neil? In my room, right now, in my office. That's a Scotch and Drambuie, by the way, for those of you who drink.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's the last time you had a Scotch and Drambuie, Wish. You've had a Scotch and
Drambuie? My mother is not a drinker, but my mother is, when she did drink, Drambuie was the thing, and like she looks at a bottle of Drambuie now and like yells at it. She's just like, the devil's in you! You're not doing that to me again!
Whatever happened to those great drinks? Like, does anyone drink Manhattans anymore?
I do. Oh, I'm an old soul, man. Oh, Elena can tell you, because Elena and I are both Mad Men fans, that I occasionally imbibe a martini during Mad Men to get into that old school vibe. I'm an old school cocktail drinker for sure.
Now, what do you have? Like, what's some of the old great? I don't even know what goes in. Like a sidecar. Do you have that? Or
sidecar.
Was it Golden Cadillac, which is the vodka, orange juice, and Galliano? Do you have that? You rock that style too.
I've not had that, but I'm a gin drinker, and I like Manhattans. My wife is not a big fan of me being a gin drinker. Like even like a gin and tonic, she doesn't like the taste of gin.
Really?
One time I had a martini at a New Jersey Nets basketball game when we were dating. We were watching the Nets and the Wizards, and we were sitting lower level, so we were near the bar, and I came back with like a gin and tonic or something back to the seats. Mm-hmm. I bought her something and I bought me a gin and tonic, and she looked at me and she goes, "Oh great, I'll be sitting next to my grandfather for the entire basketball game."
How about this? One of our friends, Pam, her and her husband Josh has had their first kid, the beautiful baby girl. And Pam loves gin and tonics. Like I like gin and tonics. She loves gin and tonics. Named her daughter Juno after juniper berries, which is the main ingredient for
gin. Wow.
Yeah, bro. Damn. Juniper berries. Hey, how come Uncle Wyszynski smells like pine? Well, that's the Tanqueray right there.
That's the Tanqueray talking, baby.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, to the beer tonight, because everybody's going to be drinking something tonight. The beer tonight, by the way, I forget the name of the blog, but I'll give him a shout out on Twitter later. But it's a Flyers blog who organized this whole thing for the Winter Classic and created Jager Lager. Jager Lager is an actual beer, and they sent me a Jager Lager in the mail. And I will be drinking that tonight in honor of the beginning of the playoffs. I've been saving it for this very occasion. And so props to the folks that sent it to me, and I will tweet out who it was later because I forget who it was. Wow. I don't have it in front of me right now. So Jager Lager, the beer of choice tonight for the big game. All right, well, there you go. That is the podcast for today. I am Greg Wyszynski of Yahoo Sports.
I'm Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet, tonight doing Hockey Central at 11 and 1 in the morning. So Vancouver, Los Angeles, don't go late. I don't want no quadruple overtimes. I'd like to get home at a decent hour, please. I have children. And that's what I'm doing tonight, which no one sends me beer. You know what I get? I get, like, junior hockey press guides. Hey, man, I found, like, a Seattle Thunderbirds press guide from 1994. You want it? Sure.
I'll be watching hockey and writing about hockey tonight. I think beforehand I might pregame a little bit. Not with alcohol, mind you. But I think I might go back and listen to my interview with Bill Simmons.
You're an asshole. You know, you're a real asshole. You're a real asshole. I saw it. Yeah, I'm... Yeah.
We got the entire show without you actually mentioning that.
Because I'm trying to block it out. Because one of the things that I'm dying to have happen to me in this podcast universe that I live in, because I'm addicted to podcasts. That's what I do. Like, when I go for my runs in High Park, when I'm running on the treadmill at the gym or whatever, like, I listen to podcasts. That is what I do. And the BS Report is one of my favorites. And every now and then, asshole on the other line here appears on it. And I can just hear him. I can just hear in his voice how he's snarking at me because he knows how much I want to be on the podcast.
My favorite part was when we were talking about this earlier today, and I tell that, you know, he gave me grief for being on the Simmons thing, and he actually says, he actually said something close to, hasn't he ever heard of a Canadian?
Yeah, that's right. You know, Canadians know hockey too, you know, Mr. Simmons.
Because it's like me and Butchagrass and Katie Baker on the podcast.
Katie Baker,
you're like,
yeah.
There's an entire country up here who treats this thing like a religion.
We claim to have invented the damn thing, for crying out loud.
Listen, we're not all about lacrosse. There's a big misnomer. It's not a lacrosse country. It's a hockey country.
We just took one of your teams. Are you familiar with the Winnipeg Jets, sir?
Indeed. All right, everybody. Well, I'm going off the reservation. I'll we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, Winnipeg Radio and you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I have to get invited now.
Okay, very good. Very good, Chief. See you later.